7:40 on this Thursday morning here on WPHM. You know, we started talking about Carl Manke last week. It was early last week that he reopened his barber shop over in Owosso, defying the governor's stay-home order, and there were many attempts to shut him down. The latest is revoking his license to cut hair in the state of Michigan. I want to sort through some of the legalities of this. Joining us right now, Lansing area attorney from the Nichols Law Firm, Mike Nichols. Mike, good morning.
Good morning, Paul. Wonderful to be on your show. I'm actually due north of you in East Tawas, looking at Lake Huron as we speak.
Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful country there. Yeah. Now, just to kind of set the stage, you and I have talked a couple of times during the coronavirus pandemic. You and I both, I think you more than I, are taking this very seriously. Last time that we spoke a few weeks ago, you had not left your home in weeks. And so you're still taking this very, very seriously, aren't you?
I have not driven my car since March 23rd. My wife drove us up here to our home once the governor gave the all clear for people to travel, but I still haven't left. I haven't gone anywhere. I've ridden my bike. I've gone for runs, for walks, but I haven't gone out in public.
As is your choice and as is my choice to stay at home other than to run out and get groceries every now and again, as is the choice of other people, I think, to do a lot of other things. Let's talk about Carl Manke, because this is a fascinating case, and it really is, I think, going to perhaps be the one that we look at, and this might be the litmus test for how much the governor can get away with in terms of emergency orders. Kind of break this down for us, what has happened up to this point and what you think might be happening next.
Sure. Carl Manke is represented by attorney David Coleman, who's a colleague of mine in Lansing and a fantastic lawyer, a gentleman, a lawyer's lawyer. And what happened was on or about May 4th, his barber shop on Main Street in Owosso reopened. City of Owosso police went and issued him a ticket and advised him to shut down, and he didn't. And then on Friday of last week, Michigan State Police issued what's called an abatement order on behalf of the Attorney General, telling him he had to close shop, and he didn't. And so this is where it gets really sort of tricky legally. There's something called a temporary restraining order that a lawyer can file on behalf of a client, here the AG, on behalf of the governor. And you can try to do it without the other side even getting notice that you're doing it, which seems patently unfair, which is why if you do it that way, which is what they tried to do on Tuesday, that's important, 4 days later, they tried to get Judge Matthew Stewart in the Shiawassee County Circuit Court to issue a temporary restraining order telling Mr. Manke he had to shut down, which would have then given law enforcement basically the power to padlock his building. But the problem is the Attorney General's office waited, number one, 4 days from Friday to Tuesday, which really sort of dissipates or flies in the face of this so-called urgent need to try to go get an order without the other side even getting notice and an opportunity to be heard. We call that ex parte. And Judge Stewart picked right up on that, and he said, look, if this was such an emergency, you should have come to court without trying to notify the other side long before you did. So before I issue any orders, I want to hear from both Mr. Manke's legal team and the attorneys general, and then I'll give you a ruling. Last I checked the Register of Actions for Shiawassee County, no hearing had been scheduled. So yeah. I'm thinking to myself, what's going on here? And then we see yesterday that a different team of attorneys general went to the Bureau of Professional Licensing under LARA, the Licensing and Regulatory Affairs Bureau, and got a suspension of his license summarily, which also means without notice and opportunity to be heard from Mr. Manke's legal team. And it's really an end run around what, in my opinion, the people of this state need, which is a full-on, fully litigated, full-throated argument from both sides about the viability and the legality of each of the orders that are in question.
Because if this keeps happening over and over, and I've seen that there's a barber in Cadillac that's doing this now, reopening. If more businesses reopen against the governor's order, you know, it's going to get really chaotic in Michigan really fast.
Absolutely. It's classic democracy. The authority of the governing body, if you will, really relates to the acceptance of the governed of that authority.
Yeah.
And there is so much tension right now. And I'm concerned on many levels, and I really wish that the Attorney General would litigate this full on in court. I know Friday, tomorrow, Judge Stevens in the Court of Claims in Detroit has scheduled a hearing for arguments on a motion for a restraining order from the legislature, which kind of would work the other way. Here, the motion is seeking to strike down certain parts of the executive orders that have been issued because of their overbreadth into so many aspects of social life in the state of Michigan.
I feel bad for law enforcement in this. It's a little difficult for them to carry out the law when it's not real clear what the law is exactly.
I've had at least two police officers reach out to me in different capacities asking me about my interpretation of the viability, whether or not this particular part of the order is still in place or whether it's expired. And it is indeed somewhat of a confusing situation.
What do you advise somebody that asks you, hey, can we shut this business down because they've reopened, or can we break up this party? What's your advice?
I like the approach that, for example, the Ingham County Sheriff and the Clinton County Sheriff have said they're going to take, and that is try to convince people to use common sense, because we shouldn't check that at the door, just like we shouldn't check our civil liberties at the door. But in a time like this, it behooves us all to try to work together for the benefit of the greater good. So let's try to break up that party without just putting people in jail. A police officer could put somebody in jail for knowingly violating the order because it is a 90-day misdemeanor. But I like the approach of let's see if we can educate people and get them to do the smart thing before we start dragging them to court.
Mike, I want to pick your legal brain for just a moment on the case of the former MSU president, Luana Simon, dismissed yesterday. Surprised by this?
Nope, not at all. I read the opinion and order from Judge Maurer, another colleague who I've practiced law with for many years before he became a judge. And it's very thorough. And the essence of it is this, and let me insert this caveat. Our law firm represented four survivors, and I get a lot of people, we're setting a bad precedent. We shouldn't let people off the hook if they were in a position of power and their institution failed. I understand that, but it's almost like there's a wave of culpability that has to have an edge, and that edge is where the law requires that a prosecutor has to marry conduct or failure to act with knowledge. And that's to me, the nub of what Judge Maurer rested his opinion in order on. She was charged with violating subsection B of MCL 750.479, which is basically knowingly making a false statement to a police officer, knowing that the officer is conducting a criminal investigation, and that piece of information has to be a material fact in the criminal investigation. And Judge Maurer said, you know, I've looked at all the transcripts from this preliminary examination. It's a very high burden for me to reverse the lower court's findings, but I have to do that because there's no evidence that, A, she specifically said, yes, I understand that we're talking about Larry Nassar. I didn't know about anything at the time of this Office of Institutional Equity or a Title IX investigation within the college back in 2014. The questions were, as the judge described it, somewhat ambiguous. The detectives, even though they had a lot of experience and were told by the Assistant Attorneys General to follow up, didn't follow up with her on what specifically she meant by some of her answers. nor was it clear that any of the information that was questioned of her was material even in the investigation. And so that's why he dismissed the case. I'm hearing, I don't know, but I'm hearing that the Attorney General is going to appeal.
Wouldn't be surprised, but it's highly unusual, but certainly an interesting case, and it'd be interesting to see if she's granted appeal. What happens there? Interesting stuff, Mike. Always appreciate your insight.
Yes, thank you for having me on again. It's always a pleasure to assist the Fourth Estate doing your job during this time of crisis, which is keep everybody informed.
We're trying, Mike. Take care. Hope the weather warms up for you up there.
Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye.